Welcome back. I hope you had a really beautiful period of practicing with movement. And we'll continue our morning together with a sit. And I want to invite you to, if you'd like to turn your camera off, that's totally fine. If right now it feels comfortable for you to be practicing sitting, that's lovely. Laying down, great. You know, there might be some fatigue and you might actually want to begin this practice standing. So just really checking in with yourself and seeing what would be most supportive right now. And as you're ready, just closing the eyes. Again, noticing what it's like to transition, to go from being in motion to stillness. And just checking in with yourself, seeing what's needed here to fully arrive. It might be as simple as making a little micro adjustment to where you're sitting. Or you might place a hand on the heart and just feel your body breathing. And feeling yourself come into stillness. You might invite in a little bit of softening in the shoulders. You might allow for some more heaviness in the arms and legs. You might even check in with the belly and see is the belly in a state of kind of habitual tension or clenching, or can you let the belly be soft? And as you rest here, just allowing yourself to begin to turn towards your breath. Knowing that you don't have to change the breath, however fast or slow, deep or shallow it is fine. Just letting yourself pay attention to it. Noticing the breath in the body, maybe at the tip of your nose, feeling the air touching the nostrils. Or feeling the body breathing as the chest and belly rise and fall. You might also notice a more global sense of the body breathing. Just staying here with the breath. And letting the quality of your focus be gentle but steady. Just connect to the breath. And then we sustain our attention. We keep it simple. Just staying here right now, this breath. we practice, things arise in our experience. We stay with the breath, but we also hear sound. We feel sensation, waves of emotion or thinking visit us. And that's okay. As you stay with your attention turned towards the breath, just inviting in a simplicity of practice, letting the breath just be the breath. The sounds in the room just sound. The sensations in the body just sensation. The thoughts arising, just thinking. Allowing a bare awareness of all that's here in your experience. No fanfare or story or complexity, just simple, plain awareness. Staying with the breath. And knowing that's enough. The mind wanders. It's okay, we just bring it back. Allowing the breath to be our anchor, anchoring our attention, our focus, in the same way that a ship's anchor would allow it to gently bob along the waves. It might drift a bit. It's not rigid, but it's able to stay in place. In these last few minutes of our practice, just letting go of the breath and seeing what it's like to just be with bare awareness of this moment. Letting whatever arises, arise. And meeting it with this simple, plain awareness. Close our practice together with some words from Mary Oliver. She writes, "Look, the trees are turning their own bodies into pillars of light, are giving off the rich fragrance of cinnamon and fulfillment. The long tapers of cattails are bursting and floating away over the blue shoulders of the ponds. And every pond, no matter what its name is nameless now. Every year, everything I've ever learned in my lifetime leads back to this. The fires and the black river of loss, whose other side is salvation, whose meaning none of us will ever know. To live in this world, you must be able to do three things: to love what is mortal, to hold it against your bones, knowing your own life depends on it. And when the time comes to let it go, to let it go." And as you're ready, just opening your eyes and returning back into our circle. Thank you for your practice. One of the things that is so wild about our practice is the simplicity of it. You know, there's a story that when the Buddha became enlightened, that Devas came to him and said, "You have to teach this." And the Buddha was actually hesitant at first. He said, "This practice is too subtle. People aren't going to get it." And the Devas looked at him and told him, "You know, yeah, it's really subtle. But there are people who have just the right amount of dust in their eyes that they won't be blinded to it, but they will be able to see it. And you'll be able to teach those people. You're one of those people, right? You found this path. You were able to see through this simple practice, this subtle practice. But there's something here. Dogen Zenji says, there are thousands upon thousands of students who've practiced meditation and obtained its fruits. Do not doubt the possibilities because of the simplicity of this method. If you cannot find the truth right where you are, where else do you expect to find it? And I love that it's so beautiful and so simple, right? We're practicing waking up right where we are, right here, right now. And we're doing it in simple but incredibly powerful ways. There's a very well-known and beloved sutta, one of the earlier teachings of the Buddha, called about bahiya. Often they'll say bahiya in the bark cloth of the bark cloth, because that's what he wore, bark cloth. And this sutta points to a lot of different layers of our practice and a pretty small story. It's not very long, but it packs a lot in there. This story talks about the desire for awakening, the sense of spiritual urgency that, we're here right now with this precious life. It's precarious. So how are we going to move forward? How are we going to pursue the things that matter to us? And it also points to the simplicity of presence. This kind of fundamental teaching of the Buddha that our practice really boils down to, of being with, letting what's seen be seen, letting what we hear be hearing. Nothing more, nothing less, letting it be simple. And the way that this simplicity, this subtle practice, can actually free us from the stress and the suffering of our desires and our doubts, and also our identification with ourselves, our status, our place in the world, where we feel we are in our practice, all of this. And so I want to share the story of Bahiya with you today. So Bahiya was an advanced spiritual practitioner. The way that it's framed in the sutta, he was probably a teacher, someone in our day and age who maybe would have written a few books, had a pretty large following. He was in a different tradition from the Buddha, just adjacent, because at the time of the Buddha, there were many, many spiritual seekers, many different traditions, many lineages. And in the sutta, it said, he was worshipped, he was honored, he was venerated by his followers as this very powerful spiritual teacher. And as his practice unfolded, at one point in seclusion, in meditation, he started to wonder, am I an arahant? Am I an enlightened master, basically? And we can imagine someone like this. Maybe there's a little bit of ego or identification in there. Maybe there's some grasping to this identification or the status of being an arahant, being an awakened one. And also, this is someone who's dedicated his life to spiritual practice. It means a lot to him to wake up. And in the story, a compassionate deva came to him and kind of gave him the smackdown, in all honesty. She said, "You, Bahia, are neither an arahant nor have you entered the path into arahantship. You don't even have the practice whereby you would ever become an arahant or enter that path." That's fierce compassion right there. Right? That doesn't sound so friendly, but that was given out of love right there. She could tell how deeply he wanted to wake up. And so she told him the real truth. And so without hesitation, Bahia asked her, well, who in this world is actually an arahant? Who's entered this path that I can go speak to and learn from? And as you can probably guess at this point, she directed him to speak with the Buddha. And so Bahia traveled to see the Buddha and happened upon a group of his monks and asked if he could meet with the Buddha. And these monks explained that, okay, we can take you to the Buddha. He's on an alms round right now. He's getting his meal from the people in this village. And so Bahia hurried immediately to the city that the Buddha was on his alms round in and found the Buddha, moving through this town with calm, with peace, with this just pervasive sense of tranquility and poise. And he approached the Buddha and he threw himself on the ground. He put his head to the Buddha's feet and he said, "Teach me the Dhamma. Oh, blessed one, teach me the Dhamma, oh, holy one, so that it'll be for my long-term welfare and bliss." There's a sense of just how important it was to him. And the Buddha said to him, "This is not the time, Bahia. We've entered the town for alms." And in many of these stories, both in Buddhist teachings and you see this in fairy tales, there's often a pattern of having to ask three times to prove essentially that you really mean business. And so Bahia pleaded with the Buddha for a second time. He said, "But holy one, it's hard to know for sure what dangers there may be for the Buddha's life or what dangers there may be for my own life. Please teach me the Dhamma now so that I can be happy and free." And again, the Buddha calmly put Bahia off, saying, "This was not the right time. They were on an alms round." And again, Bahia pleaded his case a third time. And this time the Buddha stopped and said, "Okay, I will give you instructions on how to wake up." And the Buddha said, "Well, then, Bahia, you should train yourself like this. Whenever you see a form, simply see. Whenever you hear a sound, simply hear. Whenever you smell an aroma, simply smell. Whenever you taste a flavor, simply taste. Whenever you feel a sensation, simply feel. Whenever a thought arises, let it be just a thought. Then you will not exist. Whenever you do not exist, you will not be found in this world, another world, or anywhere in between. That is the end of suffering." And on hearing this explanation from the Buddha, the story goes that Bahia woke up. That in receiving these instructions and taking them fully to heart, really openly, Bahia was immediately released from all forms of suffering generated by clinging, by desire, by aversion, by ignorance. He was able to experience the peace that he was looking for. And the Buddha went on his way. But the story continues that later that day, Bahia was actually attacked by a cow protecting her calf. and he was killed accidentally. And later that day, as the Buddha was returning from his meal following the alms round, he saw Bahia's body. And he instructed the monks to take the body away for cremation and to build him a memorial. He said to the monks, "Your companion in the holy life has died." And so, after carrying out the Buddha's instructions, the monks returned to join him. And one of the monks asked the Buddha, "You know, we cremated Bahia and we built him a memorial, but what's the destination of his future state? Basically, you know, is he going to reincarnate or did he really wake up?" And monks said, or Buddha said, "Monks, Bahia of the bark cloth was wise. He practiced the Dhamma in accordance with the Dhamma. And he didn't pester me with issues related to the Dhamma. Monks, Bahia is totally unbound and free. He wasn't practicing for that long with the Buddha, moments. But he was practicing so sincerely and trusting this subtle, simple practice. So much so that he became totally unbound and free." And so, what does all of this mean for us? A lot going on in the story. You know, Bahia was someone who would have been seen as a pretty advanced spiritual person. But like any one of us, he was struck with a sense of doubt and a hunger. Despite all his practice, all his training, Bahia was wondering, was he really on the right path? Would he reach enlightenment? And each one of us has probably had a moment like this, whether it was small or large, of asking, am I on the right path? And this could have been in a spiritual sense or a broader sense of our lives. You know, am I living my life in the way that I want to be living? Is what I'm doing in this life enough? And there's so many ways we experience these questions. They might show up in our practice as a sense of spiritual urgency, but it also might show up in our lives in different ways. You know, many of us over these last 3 years especially have probably had some bigger existential questions surfacing for us, right? I wonder how many of us in the last 3 years have maybe made some kind of a change. Well, it could be a change to a relationship or a job or a place we're living, something that's been motivated by this understanding that, you know, life is unpredictable. Often we make these choices because there's something inside of us that just knows. Something that's compelling us forward. It almost feels like it's whispering in our ear, like there has to be more than this. And that's something that we can listen to. Often that is the call to the sacred. Often that is the call to a deeper purpose or a sense of vocation. You know, for many of us, these last few years, the pandemic hasn't just put our mortality into focus. It's shown us how quickly the conditions of our life can change. So Bahia, feeling this call, he went to seek the Buddha. And even though in this sort of traditional way, the Buddha started by turning him away, Bahia felt that urgency. There was some part of him in his gut that said, "Find out now. Find out now before it's too late." You might have heard this phrase before. People say, practice like your hair is on fire. And Really, what that's actually coming from is a sutta where the Buddha explains that just like someone whose hair is on fire would go and seek relief, would go look for water or something to put out the fire, that part of our task is with that same sense of urgency to seek relief from suffering, from delusion, from craving, from aversion, and to work hard to develop the type of mindfulness and wisdom and these wholesome qualities that help us get more and more free. And that's some of the urgency that Bhatia brought to the Buddha. He knew it could be his only chance and he wanted to make the most of it. And the Buddha gives him such beautiful, simple advice. And this is this place where, again, the subtlety of this practice, the simplicity of this practice is revealed, that it's not some huge, complex bells and whistles self-improvement project. And oftentimes we'll add layers of complexity that don't need to be there. And oftentimes that actually happens, I think, when there's a sense of doubt. Is this really enough? Am I doing enough? Should I really just be with the breath and body? We live such complex lives. There's so many bells and whistles in our day-to-day experience that actually slowing down and being present with this sort of simple, bare awareness can actually feel kind of jarring. But the Buddha, and this is a different translation than the first one I read, sometimes it's helpful to read a couple different translations when we're looking at a sutta because, each translation is just going to be a little bit different, and there may be a turn of phrase in one or the other that just lands in the heart. And so the Buddha gave these simple, beautiful instructions in reference to the seen. There will only be the seen. In reference to the heard, only the heard. In reference to the sensed, only the sensed. In reference to the cognized, the thought, only the cognized. That is how you should train yourself. When for you, there will be only the seen in reference to the seen, only the heard in reference to the heard, only the sensed in reference to the sensed. Only the cognized in reference to the cognized, then Bahia. There is no you in connection with that. And when there is no you in connection with that, there's no you there. When there's no you there, you're neither here nor yonder nor between the two. This just This is the end of stress. And one part of what's beautiful about this is actually the fact that Bhatia, as this, famous spiritual teacher, likely started out this journey to the Buddha with some element of his experience really wrapped up with identification, with an attachment to being an enlightened person. That question, am I an arahant? Will I be an arahant? That he asked himself. There's a lot of you or me or mine in a question like that. Or there can be. And so part of the Buddha's teaching, this is, one of the many layers here, is that it's actually pointing him away from this sort of self-focused question and pointing him more deeply into being, into presence, into just being with consciousness, being with reality, with no overlay of identity or attachment or status, just pure presence. When we see, just see. When we hear, just hear. When we feel, just feel. And as you sense into that, you probably can feel it. There's not an I or a me or a mine in that. There's just being. And this is something that, each one of us experiences. And it may be in moments in our practice, but it also may be in moments in our life. And if you've ever had a moment where you're watching a really beautiful sunset, and it's just like, wow, the color, light, the way it changes, and you're so present with that experience, that this sense of you just fades off into the background. That's what the Buddha is talking about. Being so fully with whatever is present. So fully immersed and connected to and receiving what is arising and passing in this mind, body, and world. That this idea of ourselves and the constant adjustments and comparisons and thinking and planning, all of that falls away. And when we think back to that moment of, experiencing a sunset, there's something about that moment that's so soothing. There's not the friction that we would normally be experiencing. And in comparison, if we want to contrast that with something, just imagine that same sunset, but you're trying to get a really good picture of it so that you can post it on Facebook or Instagram or send it to someone. Ooh, that changes the experience of the sunset. Really does. And but so the simplicity, this instruction of just seeing, just hearing, just feeling, this is something that we can bring with us into our life and our practice, whether we're on the cushion or we're out in the world. This is actually a practice that can be done while we're taking care of children or creating art or doing our work or spending time with friends. You may even want to experiment a little bit with it. What is it like to be with a dear one in your life? And allow that sense of presence, right? Really hearing, really seeing, really being with. If there's love that bubbles up in the heart, being with that love. If there's compassion for what your dear one is going through, letting that compassion be. Not having to turn it into anything more than what's there in that moment. And so we can follow the Buddha's instructions to Bahia and embrace some of the simplicity for ourselves and just see what it's like. Well, and just want to share with you also this beautiful, beautiful poem by Ryokan called Playing with the Children. And it really speaks to the way that this simple presence can bubble up in our lives. He writes, "Early spring, the landscape is tinged with the first fresh hint of green. I take my wooden begging bowl and wander carefree through town. When the children see me, they scamper off to bring their friends. They're waiting for me at the temple gate, tugging from all sides so I can barely walk. I leave my bowl on a white rock. I hang my pilgrim's bag on a pine branch. First, we duel with blades of grass. Then we play with a ball. While I bounce the ball, they sing a song. Then I sing a song while they bounce the ball. Caught in the excitement of the game, we forget about time. Passers-by stop and ask, 'Why are you carrying on like this?' I shake my head, unable to answer. Even if I could say something, how could I possibly explain? Do you want to know the meaning of it all? This is it." This is it. Thank you for your kind attention.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.